used to live in a river, but then it got cold, so it had to get large. I know the legs can't rotate, but you don't think that's stupid, do you? She looked up at Camilla and the angel, then said, Am I in trouble? The angel looked at Camilla, not Nona. I've seen pictures of this animal before, said the angel, slowly and carefully. I only saw it because I did a special unit when I went to university. I went to the special zoology school on Miro and attended a heap of underground archaeology talks. I was a youthful firebrand, political, you know, and that's where I saw the picture. Okay, said Nona. Camilla said, looking at the picture, I don't think I've seen this before. You wouldn't have, said the angel. It's a cradle creature. I've heard that phrase, said Camilla, somewhere. Have you? Said the angel. Nona didn't know what to say. The angel and Camilla didn't seem to know what to say either, and they all stood around for a moment, with Nona racking her brains. Camilla took her dark glasses off and folded them up neatly to put in her breast pocket. Then she said quietly, May I ask a question? Nona glanced up at Camilla's face just to confirm it. Go ahead, said the angel, smiling without her eyes having anything to say about it. Back on Lemuria, or anywhere else, said Palamedes. Did you ever have an operation or receive medical care from the Nine Houses, even if you don't remember it? Did you ever get some kind of implant? You said you met archaeologists. Were they house? Did you specifically meet any necromancers who gave you any kind of treatment? Nona was so shocked that she forgot to breathe. Palamedes had not simply broken one rule, he had broken about 50. The expression on the angel's face brought her back to real life. It was so terrible that it hurt Nona to look. The crinkles on the sides of her eyes and mouth froze. She suddenly seemed older and more shrunken, rather than tiny and buoyant, tiny and withered. Palamedes was moved to say gently, I don't mean you any harm. But a weird, high-pitched whirring had started at the vicinity of his ankles. Noodle had gotten up from the basket, and the hair right at his flanks was standing up as though it had been electrocuted, and he was growling. Nona had never heard Noodle growl before. He broke into a volley of barks with his lips pulling back from his sharp yellow teeth. This roused the angel. She said, Bloody dog, let me put him in the kitchen with a toy. And she dragged Noodle to the kitchen by his collar. She picked up her big black bag and she closed the door behind her. And then a few seconds later she emerged, still looking grey and haggard, but more resolute and settled somehow. She was ashy underneath the freckles, and her mouth was set in a tight, cool line. But she had drawn herself up to her not very impressive height, and stood in front of Palamedes as though she weren't scared. Nona could see the terror on her lips and in her hands and in her feet. At this point, the lights finally sizzled to a close. Hot sauce was done with the generator, Nona thought. The room plunged into hot black darkness. The angel went round to the windows and pulled open the blackout curtains and the blinds recklessly, so that electric blue light puddled on the floor, and then she circled back to the teacher's desk and threw herself into the seat. She said, Nona, do you want to go and sit with Noodle? He was making little whimpering noises, even through the door. He calms down with you. Nona hesitated. But she had been kept out of one too many conversations by being sent away to do something ostensibly good. Nona could tell the angel's plan from the quick movements of the angel's eyeballs, the swallowing. She said apologetically, Normally I would say yes, but I think I'd like to stay, please. Are you sure? You can listen from the door, you know, said the angel baldly. Yes, I'm sure. The angel passed her fingers over her face, briefly touching her eyelids with thumb and forefinger, one on each. She relaxed backward into the chair. Palamedes didn't sit, But Nona sat herself down in one of the big puddles of blue light, enjoying the sensation of it and absolutely nothing else that was going on. "Did you know my colleague thought you were a Prozzy?" said the angel, wiping her hands together. "I never thought it fit." "What I know about sex work could fit in a teaspoon and leave a lot left over," said Palamedes. "Did you know the children call you the angel?" Now the angel's mouth quirked on the other side. Her composure had come back in part, and her teacher voice came to the fore, so that she might have been describing why socks would, in fact, insulate the ice cube. "Yes, they've come up with a very strange take on my nickname. It's that hot sauce's fault, I'm afraid. She's overheard a couple of things she doesn't understand. I didn't know anything about it until last night, when she explained. The kids usually call me Miss or Mister or Sir. Usually Sir, so that Jolie can be Miss. And of course, the kids just call Nona, Nona." Palamedes said, "What is the implant? Please, we only have so much time." The angel hesitated. "Look," she said, and moistened her lips with her tongue. "Will Nona listen to you if you send her to the kitchen?"
"I could ask her to, if it's important to you," he said. "But she's an adult who can make her own decisions."
"It doesn't matter. I've made my mind up. I want to stay," said Nona. Hearing that, the angel stopped looking at Nona altogether and held Palamedes' gaze instead, her own rigid, like she had put on blinders and narrowed existence to him.
"Why aren't you affected by the blue madness? Which one are you, and how many of you are still alive?"
"I thought it was sheer optimism, the report that most of you were down." Palamedes stepped Camilla's body forward, and the angel said swiftly, "Don't move, please. If you take one step closer, I'm leaving. Out the window, if I have to. You can get what you can from my dead body, but if you're this good, you might have an inkling that my dead body is designed to deny you answers."
Palamedes put his hands up.
"I'm staying right here. I want no harm to come to you. I won't compel you. I have no thought of hurting you. I am not your enemy."
"You were born my enemy," said the angel, very sadly and very tiredly now. "Or worse, you became my enemy in the last 5 minutes by doing the thing you can't walk back from."
Palamedes said slowly, "What do you think I am?"
"You can be nobody but a lictor," said the angel. "You used necromancy on me when you touched me, for that split second when I thought you'd fallen. It couldn't be anything else. I don't know what you sensed today. I've met you dozens of times, and you've never cared before, so I don't know what's changed or how I messed up, but God, what a mess!"
Nona would have laughed aloud at the idea that Palamedes was a lictor, only she was too scared to laugh. She did not know what to say or what to do. She sat in her pocket of blue light and wished hard that Camilla had just taken her home, that they were a million miles away, that today had never happened. She had the terrible sinking feeling that whatever was going wrong right now, it was her fault somehow, that she hadn't been smart enough or good enough. Palamedes was saying,
"I am not a lictor, if it helps."
"Swear to me," said the angel, suddenly intent. "Swear on your bloody life."
"I swear on the life of Camilla Hecht that I am not a lictor," said Palamedes.
The angel searched his face. Whatever the angel wanted to find there, Nona was watching her face as hard as she could, so hard her eyes were watering. She eventually found it. She slumped back in the chair with her chin sagging to her chest, and she glanced at Palamedes, drawn and gaunt and complete.
"Then that'll make this easier," she said.
The door next to the corridor opened. The angel flinched so hard that it looked as though she might be having a fit. Nona turned her head and saw Hot Sauce. Hot Sauce looked at the open curtains. She looked at Nona.
Then a huge rippling sound entered Nona's head.
She was aware of a tight, hard noise, pop, pop, distant, and then much, much closer, as though her whole head was exploding. Everything went black, but she wasn't asleep. She had the biggest and most frantic headache, and she was terrified. Her body wasn't working. She could feel nothing and perceive nothing. The headache got worse and worse and worse. Then suddenly it stopped, and she didn't know anything at all. Time exited her body. After a period apart from it, the headache came back. It wasn't as bad, and then it got a lot better. The blackness didn't go away, but her other senses started to come online. There was something rough under her face that smelled like wax crayon and lemon cleaner, and she was drooling. Her mouth was full, full of something disgusting and sticky. Her mouth opened and it all fell out. She was lying down. Nona, so well versed in thinking about what her body was doing in various states of consciousness, could tell that. An unfamiliar voice was saying, "Cancel that! I said, cancel that order! Merv, do you hear me? Merv, if I see even one of your bastards step into this building, I will call such hell down on you that they'll put your names up on the extinction roll. Don't you hang up on me, you motherfucking king-making piece of shit. I will rip off Hope's head and shit down his neck. God damn it! Fuck! Fuck!"
Then the angel. What did they say?
"They said, sure, no prob," said the unfamiliar voice. "What do you think they fucking said, Aim? Oh, boy, we're fucked. Oh, God, we're fucking fucked!"
The angel said, "Go unlock the door. We'll take the girl and get out of here."
"No, we leave her here."
"She'll get liquidated.
You should have thought of that before you started playing teacher with the friggin' Troia experiment."
The angel burst out frantically.
"I didn't know! How the living hell was I meant to know? You've kept me away from all that. I've been completely separated from any intel." "You knew Merv went mental on us yesterday, said it was a power play," snapped the unfamiliar voice. "I didn't mean that. How the hell could I have known about these two? I only realised they lived in the safe house last night."
"Yeah, well, Tessaphon is short on cash. We don't have anywhere to stash anyone," said the voice. "If you'd just let me within 2 metres of this place, I could have told you months ago."
"I was protecting my Edenite kids on the roll. They would have gotten transferred to the other side of the city, and they needed this."
"Pull yourself together, Aim. You don't get to think about what some snot-nosed kids need," bawled the voice. "What are we going to do? What the hell are we going to do?"
"Yelling at each other won't help," said the angel tightly. "You are the least respectful bodyguard I have ever had."
"Okay, cool, nice, great, cool," said the unfamiliar voice. I'm thinking. Oh my God, this is such a fuck-up. Not on a personal level, because as far as I'm concerned, good job, but this is such a fuck-up.
"We go to the roof, like you said," the angel suggested. But the unfamiliar voice said,
"Change my mind, that's not an exit. They won't shoot at us if you're with me, but we can't account for anyone else."
"Then what? God, I'm too old for this." There was a big clanging sound. It hurt Nona's ears. An awful pressure travelled through her head that felt like she wanted to hold her nose and blow something out her ears, like when she was swimming. It sounded as though someone was dragging furniture.
"Anyone comes at me, I take them down," said the voice.
The angel sounded torn between amusement and annoyance. "You discharged a firearm with me in the room, you'll get court-martialed and hanged."
"Everyone's too busy for bureaucracy," said the voice. "We play our cards right here. I can get suffer out clean. Hell, I play this really right. Nobody's going to know a thing until it's too late."
"Oh, God, you can't believe that. You're going to get yourself shot."
"Not with my pedigree."
"How many of them are there?"
9, maybe 10, plus driver, probably 11.
"That's a massacre."
"It's a compliment," said the voice modestly. "Anyway, they're still defusing the door."
The pressure got lots and lots worse. It got better. Something went clink in her very close vicinity. Her sight softly shaded back in. It was dark.
The room was hot and close and stuffy again. Nona stared at a huge, sopping red patch of blood on the floor. Her head felt wet and itchy.
The unfamiliar voice was saying, "Hang on a mo, I'm just going to deadhead these two."
The angel said tightly, "Don't you dare touch them."
"It's for your safety, ma'am. Don't watch."
"It's goddamn superstition."
"Yeah, well, Auntie always told me it was 90% superstition and 10% for the fun of it."
Big booted footsteps clomped over to Nona. This was too much, even if Cam had always told her to play dead until she couldn't.
Nona sat bolt upright in terror. Someone swore, and there was another big pop, and she was thrown forward by a huge brief light in her chest, like pain, much quicker than the headache, spreading through her ribcage briefly and wetly before it went away. She shrieked from the floor,
"You shot me! Again! That's twice!"
Then there was the angel saying,
"No! No, stop! She's alive! Stop! That's an order! That's a direct order! Nona! Nona!"
And there was the angel, rolling her over, her face wet with tears, saying, "I'm sorry, God, Nona, I'm so sorry." But Nona was not in the mood. She struggled free from the angel's grasp and looked for Camilla. Camilla was lying very still on the floor, face up, eyes half closed and staring sightlessly at the ceiling. Her front was all over blood and her hands were clutched into stiff claws over her chest, as though she had clapped them there in a panic. The amount of blood was astonishing. Nona didn't think people could even bleed that much. It was more gross than frightening. Nona crawled over to her as the angel was saying,
"Hold fire! Hold your damned fire!"
And Nona peeled up Camilla's eyelids. Even in the dark, Nona could see that they were bright, clear grey. Camilla said calmly, "It's fine, Nona. You're fine. Back up." And then Camilla opened her hands, and two bullets were there, shining in her fingers. Then she said, "Update?" Nona looked up. There was the angel, sitting on the floor, looking as though she had seen two ghosts. Near her was the new person. A compact, medium-sized person with a machete strapped to each thigh and a small heavy gun in their hands, not wearing an air mask, not wearing a hat. A mask hung around their neck as though they'd been in a hurry and hadn't pulled it up yet. Their face would have been fierce and handsome if it hadn't been puckered with shrapnel scars on both cheeks, across the nose that should have been flattish but had been broken once, in a peppery storm of burns at one temple. These scars meant they weren't fierce and handsome. They were super cool and fierce and handsome. Their hair had been buzzed short on one side and kept longer on the other. The long part dyed a shriekingly electric blue, and their brows were dark and their eyes were darker, smudged with camouflage makeup above and beneath. And Nona had known who they were the moment their body moved, but the machetes helped. It was Our Lady of the Passion, for the first time unmasked.
"Pash shot us," she wailed, "and my teacher! Palamedes was talking to the angel and someone shot us through the window and now the carpet's gross. This is the worst day of school ever."
Camilla sat up and she and Pash stared at each other. Pash's handsome features screwed into an expression of stupefied loathing. Camilla's betrayed nothing at all.
"Did you shoot us?" asked Camilla, whose left hand had tightened minutely. "No, that was fucking Mervwing," said Pash, looking as though she was sorry about it. "How the hell do you know who I am? Crown's been squealing, right?"
"No," said Camilla, who had relaxed her left hand minutely.
"Why weren't we told she was one of us?" "That's they to you," Pash said. "And you're not one of us either, Zomba."
The angel said urgently,
"Pash, I retract the liquidation order. We can deal with this later. The circumstances have changed. Is there any way you can call Merv off?"
"No, they were ready to go for you the other day when they thought Suffle was putting more of her own people in."
"Which was you, wasn't it?
Pash turned to Nona, who was wringing clots of blood out of a completely messed up braid.
You made the radio call to Crown 2 days ago. You were the one Crown was with. What the fuck's going on, you little creep?
Nona was deeply injured.
I didn't make a radio call. It was a pretend radio call. And don't call me a creep because I'm not,
the angel said helplessly. That was the Crown you're always going on about?
Nona, what are you? What is she?
And Pash barked.
I told you, you're looking at the fucking Lictor Project, AIM. Your dog was getting walked by the fucking Lictor Project and you just called White Protocol on the fucking Lictor Project,
the angel said.
Give me the radio.
Pash unbuckled a real wireless radio from her belt and tossed it to the angel, who caught it neatly, even though her hands were still shaking. She tapped something into it and held it up to her ear and said,
This is the messenger. Holding pattern downstairs, please. Then, yes, we know, and yes, we know. These are unusual circumstances. Then, yes, but if you're so hot on protocol, why aren't you letting our designated lifeguard extract us from the building? Then,
that's ridiculous.
At the second, yes, we know, Camilla scrambled to her feet. She seized a stack of chairs and shook them out in front of the doorway that led through to the cloakroom. Pash immediately raised and trained a gun on her, which made Nona gasp in indignation. But Camilla didn't stop. The angel was saying,
Get me the commander on the line, and then, You do realise one gunshot in here and you're in front of a tribunal. That Hope's in front of a tribunal. We don't...
Yes, we know we can't countermand.
Look, don't you dare. We've got my dog in here.
No! We will not put on a gas mask. This is a coup.
Fine. If you come up those stairs, the lifeguard will shoot you. Messenger out.
The angel lowered the radio. She said dolefully,
Fuck.
Pash went to the teacher's desk and threw it over. Everything on top, the paper clips and the pencil sharpener and the whiteboard erasers and the collection of paper animals, scattered to the floor in an almighty whoomp. Then she vaulted behind it. The angel moved to her, and Pash drew her gun from the strap off her back. Camilla looked at her and said,
How many? 9, 10. No gunfire, but maybe electrics, said Pash, purely on automatic, and then she blustered. Don't fucking talk to me, Hacked. The moment the commander hears about this, your ass is grass and there'll be no Crown to save you.
Do you want my help to get out of here, said Camilla, or not?
I don't bloody need your help, said Pash,
at the same moment that the angel said, Yes, we can't let Mervwing take us, not now. I did call for you to be shot, though.
No problem, said Camilla, levelly, so long as I can let out some deferred aggression.
You're a minion, and you've been bloody lying to we suffer this whole time about what you can do, said Pash hotly. The commander never said shit about you coming back from a bullet. You or the lick. I would put another one in your brain right now, for science, only I don't want to waste me ammo.
Guess we've all lied to each other, said Camilla.
Pash looked to the angel and said pleadingly,
Aim, for fuck's sake, what if she turns around and snaps your neck?
Nona, please go into the kitchen now, said the angel, for your safety, not to get you out of the way.
I don't want to leave Camilla, said Nona.
A window broke somewhere on the floor below. Camilla was already drawing Nona behind the desk. They all crouched down in the dark behind the desk with its nice particle board smell. It was so quiet that for a moment Nona thought Cam had been wrong, that there couldn't be 10 or 11 people coming for them, that the whole building was far too quiet. Noodle started to softly scratch behind the staff room kitchen door, and then AIM said,
Noodle, danger!
And he stopped, and he clacked away from the door. Camilla was saying,
Quickly, isn't there somewhere else she could go? She could take the dog.
Looking at the staff room kitchen door made Nona look at the other door, the one to the other corridor down the hall, and she remembered all at once and said,
Hot sauce? Where's hot sauce?
The angel said. Pesh locked her in the generator room. They'd have to get through here to get to her.
I want hot sauce, said Nona.
Pesh had her head crooked out from the side of the desk, watching the shut door. She said tersely,
I don't want the lich running around.
Camilla said calmly, make up your mind. And the angel said feebly, Nona, hot sauce wasn't... She saw... You see, she was in the room when... There was a distant crash, a glittery, soft sound like glass caving in. That's the door, said Camilla.
Pesh suddenly said,
Oh my God, I've changed my mind, okay? The lich goes through the door. No distractions. Get out of here.
Camilla asked,
Why not get everyone out?
Pesh said to the angel.
Come on, Aim. Even the zombie sees reason. Get in the kitchen.
But the angel, Aim, said, If they don't see me, they won't hesitate to use projectiles. Camilla said,
The longer we exchange fire, the worse. Once we break the first wave, push. Hecht. Let's get one thing straight. I'm giving the orders, and if you don't say yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir, I'll shoot out your kneecaps and use you as a meat shield, said Pesh.
Three bags full of what? Said Camilla.
Fucking whoop ass if you don't do what I say, comedian.
I'll keep to melee, no friendly fire. Pesh aggressively pulled her mask up over her mouth, a hard-shell plastic snap one with a bit for breathing through. Nona couldn't help admiring her. Her dark-rimmed grease paint made her eyes a lovely, hazily yellowy-green colour. Pesh saw Nona looking at her soppily, scowled at her with her whole face, then drew a pair of goggles over those beautiful dark-rimmed eyes. Nona vaguely made a note to practice scowling, and also to dye her hair. There was another, less distant smash. Pesh tensed up and said,
They're taking the stars.
Beside Nona, absurdly, Camilla relaxed. She was crouched behind the desk, doing something with the snaps of her baggy canvas trousers, digging her hands into her capacious pockets. She said, Nona, do you want to go or stay? Nona dithered.
Go. No, stay. No, I'll go, she said. Hot sauce needs me, unless... Camilla, please be safe. I love you so much.
This won't take long. Go when I say go, said Cam. And she smiled at Nona.
Smiled her lovely, exquisite little smile, the one that made Nona feel like she really could fall in love with Camilla forever and forever and get married to her and maybe adopt a dog.
Then she said to Pesh, Do you want them alive?
Pash's expression hardened further.
No.
Nona, said Cam,
don't come back until we come to get you. Go.
Nona fled. She scrabbled for the door next to the staffroom door and flung herself through, then shut it behind her. Her footsteps squeaked on the linoleum and the door creaked horribly, because Kevin loved to hang on doors and try to make them make the longest and worst sounds he possibly could. It sounded like a siren in that silence, worse than, and she was grateful when the door closed behind her. Then she flew down the dark, dim corridor, a place of unspeakable and enjoyable terror for her and the gang normally. It was so narrow and the walls were so dark and sweaty, and when she got to the generator room, hammered on the door before she remembered that she was the one who had to unlock it. The key was still in the lock. She turned it with sweaty fingers and drew back the bolt. She nearly tripped down the short flight of stairs and she said, It's me, Hot Sauce! It's me! Before clanging the door shut again behind her. The generator room was quiet and dark, except for a little light box window over the internal door and another one through to the outside. Only there was a taller building in the way, so it let in sickly greenish light. When the generator was on, it usually made a lot of violent whuffling noises, the kind that threw the tinies into disorder, because honesty had told them it was powered by kids their age burning to death inside. It wasn't like they believed him, but they hated the story. Hot Sauce was lying curled up in front of the generator. She'd been sick, and there was a bright, acid smell of vomit. But Nona didn't care. She went to Hot Sauce's side and she rolled her over. Hot Sauce looked at her, but also didn't look at her. Her eyes were strange. She looked at Nona as Nona got out an old wad of tissue paper from her pocket and wiped Hot Sauce's mouth and nose.
"It's me, Hot Sauce. It's Nona,"
Hot Sauce said clearly. "I made it up." Nona didn't know what this meant, so she said,
"Yes, it's fine. I'm fine."
So that Hot Sauce said more strongly and more wonderingly,
"I made it up." "Yes, only there are people in the building and we have to stay here because they've come to kidnap the angel," said Nona.
Hot Sauce said,
"She had a bodyguard." "Yes," said Nona. "Stupid," said Hot Sauce. "Stupid. Didn't watch her enough. Didn't read the signs. Didn't watch... Nona, I made it up."
Nona decided to go along with this. It seemed important to Hot Sauce.
"Yes, you made it up."
Hot Sauce's hand was still trembling a little. She didn't seem like she'd been hurt, but she was shivering. She tugged up her shirt so that Nona could see, along with the soft, watery ripples of the burns down her belly, what she had tucked into the waistband of her trousers. It was a handgun. Nona said, alarmed,
"Hot Sauce, don't carry it like that. Pyrrha says everyone who carries guns in their pants ends up shooting off their balls, and it sounds incredibly rude, but I believe her."
Hot Sauce's face wavered and softened.
"You're sweet," she said.
From down the corridor and a little beyond, there was a big crash, and then a really astonishing huge noise like ZUT! The kind of whip-crack sound Pyrrha could make with the dish towel, and a very short scream. Hot Sauce sat up so quickly that it was all Nona could do to wrestle her down again. She struggled against Nona toward the door, and Nona had to go full dead weight on her, pin her to the floor, wrap her arms and her legs around her as though she were Hot Sauce's baby who lived in a pouch. They both fell to the floor and were a little stunned, but when a huge, resonant blam, blam, blam percussive gunshot rattled down the hall, much bigger and deeper than the normal peppery gunfire noises, Hot Sauce went quiet and limp. She shuddered in Nona's arms. She said,
"I made it up. All of it."
"Yes, all of it," said Nona. And then, in a fit of honesty, she said,
"Only, what did you make up, Hot Sauce?" "The bullet went into your head," said Hot Sauce.
Nona tried to remember everything honesty had ever told her about lying, lies, porkies and untruths.
"You think it did," she said cunningly, "but it didn't." "It made a hole," said Hot Sauce.
Nona, exhausted from lies, was saved from having to think up more by another blam, blam, and a long, cut-off scream, and then a terrific, tinkling, glassy smash. A yell seemed to briefly come from outside somewhere, and then there was no yell at all. Nona held Hot Sauce very tightly, and after a while she felt Hot Sauce's arms go around her, and she knew that Hot Sauce was going to be all right. They lay there together in the sweltering, gross-smelling dark, listening to the sounds coming from down the hallway. Ever since she had known what fighting was, Nona had yearned to see Camilla fight. Camilla mostly wouldn't. She had sparred with Pyrrha a couple of times, briefly and violently, always on Pyrrha's critique, with Nona barely able to follow what was going on. Sometimes on the beach, in the dark, away from the hot stripe of the lone yellow light still functioning in front of the harbour pier. Now, as she listened as hard as she possibly could to noises she could not understand, Nona shivered all over and could not work out what she felt or what she wanted. She kept savagely biting at the inside of one lip so that the blood would come out, and then it would seal over. She heard noises that sounded as though people were throwing furniture around the classroom. Rude, when they were already low on chairs for anyone who wasn't a tiny. Older kids were sitting on all sorts of things. And then one last long sound that wasn't a scream, but a huge whimper. Then nothing. Hot Sauce's gun poked into Nona's thigh. After a long time in the silence, she whispered,
"Is it over?"
Hot Sauce didn't answer.
"We should stay here, I guess," said Nona, answering herself. It was always nice to be answered, even if it was just you.
Hot Sauce was so still and quiet that Nona thought she must have fallen asleep. When someone rapped lightly at the generator room door, though, she rolled away from Nona with her hand at her waistband, and it wasn't until the angel's voice said, "Nona? Hot Sauce?" that she took her hand away. Nona stood as the door opened, and there was the angel. It was too hard to see clearly in the dimness of the room, but she didn't seem any worse for wear, not limping or anything. Noodle followed on her heels, still cringing a little bit, but he headed straight to Nona and Hot Sauce when he saw they were lying down. Noodle loved it when people were lying down. He sniffed Nona around the mouth and licked her until she said, "Ugh," and she had to sit up in a hurry. The angel said very gently, "We need to leave now." Nona said, "How is Cam?" Feeling this was unfair, she added hastily, "And Pash?" "They're fine. Cuts and scrapes." "Phew," said Nona. "Is the classroom munted?" "Well, the windows are going to have to be replaced and the blinds are busted," said the angel evasively. "And I think someone fell on the bean experiment, and Noodle did a wee in the staff room, but really, it could be worse. The juniors will have to add 'got smooshed' to their bean experiment variables. There's no coming back from that one." Nona was sorry for the bean experiment. The angel said, "Did Pash hurt you when she bundled you in here, Hot Sauce? She can be a bit aggy." But Hot Sauce said tonelessly, "I'm fine," and, "Let's go." Nona was more than happy to follow this edict. She and Hot Sauce held hands all the way down the corridor. She thought Hot Sauce looked at her a little strangely, but after everything they had been through, that didn't really strike Nona as odd. As they came to the lighter part of the corridor, as they entered the square of light the doorway opened onto the classroom, Hot Sauce detached her hand from Nona's altogether. The classroom was much more of a mess than the angel had let on. Nona barely noticed the wreck of the bean experiment. Pash was nowhere to be found, and Cam was dragging bodies out to the cloakroom. Human bodies. Real bodies. And Nona's eyes followed a pair of boots disappearing at Cam's feet in awful fascination. She stared, unseeing, until suddenly Cam was back in the classroom and said sharply, "Nona, come here!" Nona couldn't for a moment. There were more boots behind Cam in the cloakroom. Wind scoured through a big hole in the window where the edges of the glass were strung with red globs and gobbets, a hot and drying wind that made Nona's eyes wrinkle up. She stared in wonderment at what remained of a display on the wall she had helped staple together, a big impressive art and writing collection about people in our community, with most of the people in our community riddled with holes. Otherwise, everything was quite clean, though the angel was right about the beans. There wasn't really much blood, certainly compared to the stuff Nona and Cam had left on the floor themselves. The spell was broken when Cam lifted her chin with one hand, so that she was forced to stare at Cam's grave grey eyes, at the drying blood and the holes in her top. Camilla was wet with sweat. Nona buried her face in Cam's chest. She listened to Cam's heart thudding in her ribcage, the big, soft ta-thum, ta-thum, and she was amazed at how fragile and silly her heart was, how poorly protected. Camilla let her stay there for quite a long time, until she extracted herself. Nona said, "Are they all..." "Nearly," said Cam. Hot Sauce stood in the middle of the classroom. She was standing where Nona had been shot. The sun had moved, and the blood was now in shadow. Hot Sauce squatted on her haunches to touch it. Then she stood up and she looked at Nona, more particularly the side of Nona's head. Nona reached up past a braid and found it was stiff with blood. I didn't make it up, Hot Sauce said,
and her voice sounded wrong. Nona felt uncomfortable.
I didn't quite lie to you, Hot Sauce, she said. There was a hole in your head, said Hot Sauce.
Pash came back from the cloakroom. She was sweaty too, and there was a red line of grime where her hard-shell mask had rubbed her face. She said,
Driver's down. The unit's wiped.
The angel said, Oh, God, Pash, was that really necessary?
Both Cam and Pash said yes at the same time and then looked at each other. Nona would have found that funny, except that Hot Sauce was still looking. She broke away from Cam to take a step toward her, and then Hot Sauce took a step back. Nona felt wild and sparkling, electrocuted with despair. She said, and found her voice quite tight and funny,
Hot Sauce? I saw you die, said Hot Sauce. But I'm not. You see, I'm not.
The angel said,
Hot Sauce, I think you need to come with me.
But Nona had crossed over to Hot Sauce, caught her hand before she could run away again, pressed it to her chest so that Hot Sauce might feel Nona's own ba-dump, ba-dump, just like she had felt Camilla's. She cried out,
You feel? Feel it, feel my heart going.
Hot Sauce seemed to feel it. She stared at Nona's chest. She moved her hand up next to Nona's neck, quite professionally, like a doctor might, to feel the pulse there. Nona willed everything into that pulse, willed away the cold, dead expression in Hot Sauce's eyes, willed away the shiver at Hot Sauce's mouth.
You are alive, Hot Sauce agreed slowly. But you were dead. I saw it. Some of your brains came out. Yuck, I didn't know, said Nona, deeply embarrassed.
The angel said, Hot Sauce, I think you should come here and talk to me for a while.
Shut up, said Hot Sauce,
and Nona was outraged. Nona was amazed that Hot Sauce should talk to her deity, the reason for her existence, talk to the angel that way. Before she could get any more shocked, though, Hot Sauce raised her other hand, and the gun with it. She pressed the muzzle up against one of Nona's temples. Nona dragged her eyes up to Hot Sauce's face, stunned.
You're out of the gang, said Hot Sauce,
and squeezed the trigger.
John 5:1. In the dream, he took his time approaching the concrete building. He seemed afraid to. When night fell, he scrabbled around and found a canister full of petrol, smelling hard and strong, and he sloshed it all around the car and he lit it on fire. She didn't like the smell. They sat away from it. At this altitude, the wind kept whipping hard into the flames, licking them redly higher, sending sparks with every blast of air. And she did not ask him, but he said,
In the end, we got patted on the shoulder and they expected us to be happy. They said, You won't have to go to jail. Just keep behaving and no more cow stunts, please. Also, I have chronic sinusitis. Can you do something about that?
He said,
All the powerful friends we'd made, all those people said I would have been a good thing if they'd had time to present us the right way, that we were something mystical and wonderful, but they were too busy for miracles, that if we'd behaved better or been more attractive, I don't even fucking know anymore, then they'd have listened. And like, at some point, you stop wanting people to listen. You want people to do.
He said,
We got together one night in the kitchen. And like, it was beef again, so we felt bad, man, but at least none of us was vegan. The meat couldn't go off because I was there. There was a lot of it, but we had a lot of people who needed a feed. We sat there with the window cracked so G could hear us while he manned the barbie, which in the dark gets unwholesome as hell, and we ate off paper plates, and I told them, this is it. We were put here
to save the planet. We're going to save the planet. We're not going to let them run away. We're going to fix this. And they were all, yeah, John, because they were my friends and they loved me. But because they were also dicks, and most of them had multiple tertiary degrees, they were also like, how though? We know you can do X and Y and Z. That's still not A or B or C. We love the bone magic, but how are you going to pull this off? And it was P of all people who said, first things first, if they're going to let us fix the world, you've got to make them take us seriously. Get some leverage. If they want to make you into a bad wizard, be a bad wizard. We can write the history books to say you were a good wizard, or at least an okay wizard. They're not going to listen because we talk nicely. They're going to listen because we scare the shit out of them, he said, which just goes to show that only getting to NCEA level 2 isn't going to stop you making waves in life, right? You can still eat steak, talk to wizards, and take down the government. She did not say anything. In the end, he wasn't really talking to her. He was talking at her. All she had to do was wait for him to say, then we got an opportunity. He said, soon after that, we got visited by a big black car with a bunch of suits in it. We didn't want to, but they had a chat with us over the phone to promise they only wanted to talk. They were representing someone else. I was more confident by then that I could handle anyone coming to ambush us. I had Titania and Ulysses with me all the time, too. But they really did want to talk. They were very vague about who they were with, but the upshot was that their organisation was having a bad time because their leader had recently been indisposed, and that was going to make them have a worse time pretty soon. When we pushed on how indisposed, they admitted he was dead. And I was all, I cannot help you there, that's beyond me right now. And they were all, no, no, what we want is for him to not look dead. We can do the rest. In fact, we prefer it this way. Could you give him a permanent pulse? Could you make it so he bleeds if he gets hurt? Could you fix any current degradation to his corpse? Could he talk if we wanted him to? I thought it was an interesting project. I was all, probably. Let me work on it. I'm going to have to do some long-range tweaking. If you want him to speak, you'd need me on call. This couldn't be a one-off. I kept trying to push to find out who the hell they were and who this guy was, but they were immovable. They were all, here's what we'd pay up front. Here is what we would pay every month you kept him looking alive. He said, and that figure had a lot of zeros. I was all, let me think about it. After a few weeks, I proved I could do it. It wasn't hard. Biggest problem was getting the blood to heat up inside the body so the corpse wouldn't spurt stuff well below human temp. I said they could fix him up with a heated jacket, but they were anal about it. To make him talk, they had to deep fake a voice box and have someone speak through it or give it a simple AI and call me for complicated speeches. Then we set a time and a date for them to fly me offshore, me and A and M and G, everyone else staying at home, to do the job and to get the payment. They got me a Sino-Swiss bank account under an alias so I could move the cash. I had phone calls from the bankers setting it up, and we were all pretty excited about this because, hell, couldn't we start bankrolling the cryo project again? Wasn't this funding money? He said, I was all set to fly out when we got another update about the FTL project. They'd got every commitment we'd struggled to get or were in the process of begging for all of a sudden. IAF had said yes. Pan-Euro had said yes. They'd tendered the plan for the first and second and third waves to fly everyone off the planet, and it was going to take 5.5 years max, and that was with leaving people behind to shut everything down before the final wave. No mess, no fuss. They'd stolen a lot of our wording, but, like, that was just one last kick in the ass. We barely felt it. And the reason it was going through was that it was charitable. They said they were funding the bulk of it. It was their money taking these soon-to-be-impoverished trillionaires into space. The guys who'd been so tight with us that their arseholes squeaked when they walked. M and A kicked off again. All, this is horseshit. This is lies. What ships are they using? Who's engineering this and where? Our contacts were all, ooh, we've seen photos. Our people toured the yards. It's fine. It's all according to plan. I couldn't believe how naive they were being. I couldn't believe they were falling so hard for this corporate smoke show when there'd been so many checks and balances and hemming and hawing over us. C tried to say, yes, but that was a different time. Things are very scary now. If you were launching the cryo project right at this minute, you'd probably find it a lot easier. But that didn't make any of us feel better. It was A's little brother who said, well, you have to understand, money is one big shared hallucination. But I'm not sure they could have hallucinated this much. None of this is even in crypto. We were sure it was a con. Not even a pipe dream, but a con. He said, but nobody listened to us. Nobody investigated the things we told them to investigate. Everyone showed us what looked like evidence to them, and when we argued back, they reminded us that cows had best friends and complex social relationships. M and A were a united front, and that was scary as fuck. It was always frightening when they stood together. Both of them were pretty quiet when we ended up taking the helicopter out together, us three, landing on a random oil rig to do what we were going to get paid to do. I asked to see the body before anyone passed any money off to anyone. Sixth sense, I guess. He said, they let me in to see the body, and I realized who I was dealing with and how big this was, because I wasn't dealing with a group. I was dealing with a fucking nation. I was dealing with a huge political conspiracy. A and M looked at it and looked at me and they said, do it! So, I did it. I fixed up the corpse, all the ice damage from storage, all the trauma of the body trying to eat itself after death, did the blood transfusion manually to rehydrate what was there and get it going, made sure the body was working mechanically, unstiffened all the muscles, rejigged the heart, did the little tricks I'd thought of, got the eyes to blink by themselves, helped them install the throat speaker and helped with the mouth. I was feeling pretty sick about it by that point. I'd had no idea the guy was even dead. I mean, that was the point. Nobody did. But I didn't feel like a hero. Then again, what could I do? They kept saying this was for a year, max. Nobody could afford this much political instability right now. We were in the middle of an extinction event. He said, so I had him sitting up and walking around and moving, and we even tested him making a video call home. All fine. It worked great. But I was like, you still need me for big public appearances. I can do it long range. And they were all, we've budgeted for that. And that was when A and M stepped in to negotiate. They said they didn't want the payment in pure cash. They said I wanted something more material. And we went around and around and fucking around. At one point, I thought they'd open fire on all of us because they were being so fucking stroppy. They were hitting the table like in a police drama, like, we can end this whenever we want. The ball's in our court. We know how much this means to you now. I was all, wow, sorry, guys.
I don't really know either of these two. They're very unexpected and mean. I came here to have a good time, and I think they're being very harsh. I think between bad cop, worse cop, and sorry cop, they got so sick of us that they told us, "Fine, we'll arrange it here and now." He said, "That's how I ended up going home with a couple billion dollars and a suitcase nuke."
19. When Nona got her sight back, she was lying on a bed made of three chairs pushed together. Her sight and her sound and her smell came back all at once, but her memories stayed weirdly distant, like they were shuffling their feet behind a doorway, waiting to announce a surprise party. She did not know the room. She was staring up at a particle-board roof with holes in it and a long flickering bar light, and she was lying in the awkward, rucked-up way one always has to lie on a makeshift bed. That didn't matter. She had been put to sleep on makeshift beds plenty of times by plenty of people. What mattered was that her ankles had been haphazardly bound to one of the struts on the chair's frame, and one of her hands had been tied to the bit of the chair that was closest to her head. The other hand had been chained to the radiator, with the type of plastic-sheathed chain that people put around their bicycles when they wanted the bicycle thief to really have to work for it. She had seen that type of chain in the city, usually in two pieces, from where it had been cut with pliers. Abruptly, Nona threw her third tantrum. Nona had thrown exactly two tantrums in her entire life. She couldn't remember anything about the first one, but Pyrrha had told her about it. Pyrrha had been laughing with her mouth, but not with her eyes. Her eyes had been very brown and distant and uneasy, as though this tantrum had reminded Pyrrha of something her brain didn't want to bring back. Everyone could remember her second tantrum. That was when it had been impressed upon her to keep her temper. And it was the reason Palamedes and Camilla always let her go to the ocean, even though it was the most dangerous thing she could ever possibly want, both for their anonymity and just in general. The ocean made her stop being angry and had a prolonged effect, so that a weekly dip meant that she was never worse than a little whingy. But at that moment, everything that had happened, Pyrrha, the angel, hot sauce, calmly wiped out long and careful weeks of Palamedes and Camilla dipping her in the ocean. Nona arched her back right up off the chair and let out a long, bellowing scream, one that went on for ever and ever and ever until her throat broke and healed and broke again, and she was screaming blood as well as sound. This was her warning to everyone else. After she had done that, she gave in to the simplicity of anger. She tugged and tugged and tugged on the arm chained through the radiator until it should have hurt. But, as always happened, she was beyond pain or thought. In fact, everything hurt a lot. It hurt in that slippery, frightening way her body used to let her know that she had made a huge mistake. But Nona's anger gave her the power not to listen. Her hand came free of the chain and the radiator. It made a mess. Next, she had to get her ankles free of the chair, and that was harder, because everything was wet now. She had to use both hands and both her feet. For long, helpless, frantic moments, she thought she was stuck, the way she used to get frightened when Camilla had put a shirt over her head, and things went wrong on the way, and her head tried to get through the armhole. It was with the same kind of sweating, anxious rearrangement that she got her feet free now. The plastic ties were good, like Corona had said, and they didn't break. But Nona came through them, screaming. There was nothing in the room but the three chairs, which would probably never be used as chairs again after what she had done, and a dusty laminate table, and the light, and the locked door. Nona would have posted herself under the door if she had to, but the door wasn't actually that strong. She brushed some of the mess and a discarded finger off the seat of one of the chairs, and she hit the door with it. The beauty of her anger was not in her strength. Nona's body could never be strong. The beauty was in the fact that she could hit the door over and over as hard as she possibly could, as many times as she liked. That was a mess too, but she was angry. The door caved in. The chair's cushion cover had come off, and so had one of the welded arms. The other arm had snapped off earlier. It had been useful when she needed a jaggedy edge to make herself smaller. This second arm had come off longer, and she gripped that one firmly, one hand at the bottom and the other hand atop that one. Even with everything so soggy and slippery, that felt safe. When she finally battered down the last fragments of door, she stood with the weapon held before her and faced a tight knot of people in their masks and their combat trousers and their big boots, just like Pash's boots. The thought of Pash's boots made her mad again. She suddenly hated Pash. If it had not been for Pash, maybe nobody would have got shot. Maybe nobody would have locked hot sauce in the generator room. In front of her was a row of shining holes at the ends of raised guns, and for the fourth time in a very short period, they shot her. She slipped in a puddle and fell backward into the splintery door wreckage, two bullets in her chest, one in her knee. Nona got up again, and she was madder than ever. She stamped one foot in the splatter, and then another. She brandished the piece of broken cheap metal like a sword, and she screamed so loudly that it was coming out of her nose and her eyes and her brain, and every one of those soldiers took a step backward. Nona turned and ran. Her feet made slop, slop, slop sounds as she fled down the corridor. There were people gathering in front of her with more guns, people who, for all their different masks and goggles and hoods, always seemed like the same fake person. Somebody down the corridor shouted, "Disengage! Disengage!" But Nona's scream was louder. One of the soldiers didn't disengage. They shot her again instead. She raised the metal over her head and she ran at him. They were screaming through their mask. Nona screamed through hers, the mask that was the front of her face. There was a lot of noise now. Sounds crowded in all at once. It was like being the person in the middle of a traffic island whose job it was to direct all the heavy vehicles. Nona had once thought that seemed like a wonderful job to get to do, but no longer. Even the Edenite had cringed away from her screaming. They had dropped their gun and their gloved hands were clapped over their helmet, over their ears, and she opened her mouth to remember her teeth. Someone dropped something over her head. It was a hood, and it was tightening at the neck. She reached up to tear it off, but something big and heavy pinned her arms against her body. It was like being swaddled. Nona struggled, but this was a good defence against her, maybe the only defence. Camilla had wrapped her up in a blanket too the second time. When it all went dark, her body seemed to remember that she had used something up inside her, something enormous, and she started to tremble. She trembled so hard that she thought she would die then and there, that this was what dying was finally like. Inside the hood she heard her mouth say, savage and distinct and cool despite the trembles, "Fool! You're killing her!" But she was only talking to herself, after all.
John 3:20. In the dream, nights did not give way to mornings. The light coming through the clouds changed colour, but nothing rose and nothing sank, except their chests when they breathed. In the dream she quite often forgot how to breathe or swallow, and she would choke on her own saliva until the fright passed and the body remembered for her. In a darkness that could have been sunrise, he said,
"None of us ever wanted to use that nuke. We never thought we would. It felt like a toy. We kept laughing that it came with a manual. I think we were scared of what would happen if we stopped laughing. We pulled up the floor and put a safe beneath the lino and swore we were never going to use it. G made sure it couldn't be armed. It was never something we were going to blow for real, but it was our leverage. It was a way to force people to listen to us just as much as the money was. Our first method was to keep telling the truth, keep pushing on the FTL story, keep asking hard questions. Our second method was to throw money at it. Our third method was to tell people that we'd got a nuke.
He said,
"It wasn't as naive as it sounded, like, yeah, we were very aware that simply having this thing, that's a serious international incident. But we'd been party to this massive secret, right? We had access to one of the biggest political scandals of all time, and we were key helpers on the cover-up. A bomb would at least give them pause. It had to. And we were sick of how much time everything was taking. We'd been subjected to so much bureaucracy and so much red tape and so many people refusing to do so many things that we were willing to gamble on being tried at The Hague just to stop the process. Ready to make a hell of a mess to buy time. Prepared to do anything to keep you going." C kept saying, "Pick one. Are we more invested in proving this new plan is bullshit or in saving you?" I was like, "It's both. How can it not be both?" C was like, "It can't be both. Pick one and stick to it. Decide what you give a fuck about." He said, "I found that the problem with being the death man is you stop giving much of a fuck."
Then he said, rubbing circles into one temple with his thumb,
"I still can't believe they wouldn't give me the time of day and they were scared of me. It's not fair. Either you're the evil wizard and everyone wants to know what you think, or you're the good wizard and nobody cares. It wasn't fair. That wasn't how it was meant to work."
In the dream, she did not ask him questions. The burnt-out shell of the car was still smouldering. It seemed like the smell was in her clothes, in her hair, in the mud. It was still cold this high up in the mist, and the cold made the fronts of her arms bumpy, which panicked her until he told her it was natural. He said,
"The FTL plan was going steadily by then. More and more nations had given their okay. They were on to arguing over who went in the ships, size and shape, how they could make sure it didn't turn into a colonial exercise on the other side. That's where they met resistance, because the trillionaires were all, 'But we've got our hand-picked guys. There's only so much room. They've already undergone training. This isn't a tourist trip.' Nobody liked that. We'd been calling bullshit the whole time, and now we were getting some traction. I said, 'Give me a year, and I'll see if I can't solve the Tau Ceti question by myself. We've already got plans. I could do a hell of a lot with the cryocans now if you let me. And some trans-Tasman support.' But then the trillionaires banged the wanted criminal drum and put me on the back burner. The bastard said, 'Fine, we'll make room for 200 nominated people. 200! 200! And I was all, 'They won't fall for that.' He said, 'They fell for it.' He said, 'Turns out everyone wanted to nominate someone to go on board, especially if they could nominate themselves. The absolute fuckers. Once they got that green light, they said the first wave would leave in 3 months. We have to do this quickly, get the second wave ready before our next round of climate starvation.' He said, 'We paid people to find their engineering facilities. That was a huge pain in the ass. Like, talk about a group of people who couldn't find somebody to buy weed off of, now out looking for mercenaries. Thankfully, P knew a bunch of army guys who knew ex-army guys. It was all very soldier of fortune. They got caught pretty much immediately, but I was good at long distance by then. I'd had to practice. I got eyes and ears on the plant that was meant to be the main building site, and I immediately saw that it wasn't to spec. The deliveries they were getting weren't even the right stuff to build the ships. They were bringing in random crap to make it look like they were busy. It didn't seem like they had enough people. The superstructures of the new fleet weren't progressing. Best of all would have been to walk into an empty building, but what I saw was immediately suspicious enough for us to be sure it wasn't enough. He said, "So, I went to the governments that were still sympathetic, sort of like ours, and all the Trans-Pacifics, and we threw down our evidence, all, 'Take a look at this, this isn't working.' They should have stopped the launch and seized the factories until they could investigate properly. But instead, they asked the trillionaires for their point of view. And the trillionaires lied. They lied like their lives fucking depended on it. They had a glib answer for every question. I swear someone told them we were onto them beforehand. I mean, cheapo mercs did get caught. They lied and everyone swallowed their shit. Not only that, they looked at us and were like, 'We were going to put you fellas in jail, weren't we? Isn't it time you guys stop being independent actors? Aren't you recognized by most nations as a cult? We're all legally appointed officials here, except for the trillionaires. Did you know cows recognize one another?' He said. I got mad. He said, 'Back at home, I told them, they want to call us a cult. Let's be a cult. It only takes a little bit of eyeliner and a couple capes. En already had eyeliner and capes. We'd tried to keep everything so clean-cut and scientific, but now we were streaming quicker than they could serve us subpoenas. End of the world is nigh, that kind of thing. Join us, live forever. Your governments are lying to you.' Before, when it started, I'd tried to use all these scientific terms, tried to coin phthinergy, talk about a word that needed an antihistamine. I'd tried to make out like everything I was doing had principles I was probably going to write papers on later. I dropped all that. Because, turns out, nobody wants papers. Nobody wants principles. They want the magic bullet. They just want to be saved." He said, "I told them I'd save them. And I said, 'I'm a necromancer.'"
Day 5.
Crown plays her part. The saint of duty. Palamedes comes clean. The saddest girl in the whole entire world. Nona watches a duel. The convoy. Paul gets born. One last trip. 24 hours until the tomb opens.
20.
Waking up, Nona didn't know how much of the day and night had been part of her dream. Nona got the disorienting sense that nearly all of it had been imagined. And she was only now starting her day, and she would soon be telling Cam everything in front of the recorder and persuading her out of breakfast. She woke up lying flat on her back, with something warm draped over her, and the familiar cheap soap and leather smell of Camilla tickling her nose. One of Cam's jackets had been rolled up and put under her head on top of her pillow. For a happy moment, Nona thought she was home. But the floor underneath Nona was scrubby carpet, not tile, and the walls were unfamiliar. She rolled onto her side. Her vision swam horribly, and she found with a start that she was going to be sick. Nona started dry-heaving pitifully, and there was Cam with the wastebasket, pulling her hair back, saying gently, "There you go, don't force it." So it wasn't Cam. Nona tried to be as sick as she could be, which took a while and a lot of effort. Afterward, she felt better. But as though she had run up and down the street outside the building 5 times in quick succession, and her whole body hurt. "Oh!" gasped Nona, and she flopped back on the makeshift bed and shakily wiped her mouth with her arm. She was in a darkened room, right next to a long table with chairs.
As she hadn't seen it from this angle before, it took her a little while to recognise the meeting room in the Blood of Eden facility, same one as last time. The portrait of the redhead with the cruel eyes stared down at her from her thicket of dried-up flowers, as though contemptuous that Nona had had the bad manners to throw up in front of her. Her vision shimmered. She had to lay her head back again. Palamedes was looking at the contents of the wastebasket with a troubled expression, which was gross as well as worrying, and she knew the jig was up. She whispered, "Are we alone?" "Yes, but we won't be for long. Nona, I need to make sure you're all right."
"Did the bullet come out my head?"
"No, I had to take it out. It got stuck." She was nearly too afraid to ask.
"Hot sauce?"
"Hot sauce wanted to leave," said Palamedes. "And, well, we let her leave, Nona."
Nona's heart felt that the bullet had got stuck there instead.
Palamedes continued, "Blood of Eden brought us here to see we suffer, which is fine, and I worked on you, under supervision. Most of Ctesiphon Wing saw the bullet in your head, and of course nobody knew before how quickly you regenerate, because we hadn't told them. So they shackled Cam and me, then locked you up."
"Which made me mad."
"Which made you mad?"
Nona said tentatively, "I made a big mess, didn't I?" And Palamedes said briskly,
"They should have bloody guessed. Every mistake they've made with us stemmed from a complete lack of trust, a cowardice and an unwillingness to let us in on the game. And now that I know what I know, or think I know, but Nona, what's more important is that I make sure everything in your body works, because if you'd been a normal human being, we would be planning your funeral."
"Don't bother," said Nona, affrighted. "It only made me angry, which I think was a pity," she added belatedly.
"Yes," said Palamedes distantly. "It was a pity. But Nona, Nona, about that broadcast. You saw it, didn't you? All of it? And you didn't recognise anyone you saw?"
Their jig was finally up. "Only the girl from my dream," said Nona. Palamedes breathed in through Camilla's nose, then out through Camilla's mouth.
"You didn't tell me that."
"You didn't ask," said Nona.
"Nona," said Palamedes, very, very slowly. "That was very important information. Information that changes everything. The type of information we have schooled you for the last 6 months to tell us instantly, and the type of information Camilla and I personally trusted you to prioritise."
This was too much to bear.
"I've had things to think about," Nona wailed. "I didn't want to get in trouble."
"Have Cam and I ever gotten you in trouble?"
"No, and I didn't want to ruin that. Honesty always gets in trouble, and it's terrible," said Nona. "And it's not fair trying to talk calmly and sadly about my responsibilities when I know you're thinking, 'Nona, I want to beat you up with the broom handle.'"
"Just say, 'Nona, I want to beat you up with the broom handle.'"
"I'd never use the broom handle on you," said Palamedes.
Nona was mollified.
"You wouldn't feel it."
"If Cam and I didn't love you as much as we do," said Palamedes, "we would take turns throttling you, then give all your magazines to charity." Palamedes had never said the word love before. More than anything, even the idea of her beloved magazines going to charity, as though others were more deserving than Nona, the most deserving person on the planet, this broke her.
"Don't interrupt me. I've got to tell you something, and I have to tell you really quickly," said Nona. Only she choked on the rough stuff in the back of her throat, and she said, "You know how I've been sick lately?"
"Yes," said Palamedes.
"Well, I thought I was only going to be sick for not much longer. Maybe a few weeks or a month," said Nona, trying to organise her thoughts.
She licked her lips and whispered up to the ceiling.
But now I think I only have a few days. Oh, thank goodness I said it. Wow, that's a relief.
Palamedes went silent. Then he said, A few days of what?
Oh, living,
said Nona, too relieved at having said it to feel stupid.
It's nearly over, Palamedes. I'm dying. I've been dying for months.
Then Palamedes touched her, and he did not throttle her. He ran Cam's soft, chapped hand all over her head. He touched her ribs and her belly, and he pulled off her shoes and touched the soles of her feet. Then he got up and he pulled open a drawer on the desk and he came back with, of all things, a fat black marker. He said, Nona, put your hands on your hips and put your ankles together. I need a closed circuit. She put her hands on her hips and joined her ankles. Palamedes lightly sketched something just beneath the hollow of her throat, saying, Keep still now, when she laughed, being ticklish. The pen made a lot of little light feathery whip-whip-whips on her, and then Palamedes laid it down and said, Here goes nothing. And nothing was what happened as Palamedes hovered Camilla's hand over Nona's face, her throat, down the line of her abdomen, except that his fingers were wreathed in fine blue flames, completely smokeless and heatless. They cast terrifying lights in the room, even though they didn't flicker, staying nearly perfectly still. There was nothing more than a slight tingling feeling as he made it all the way down to her feet and back, and then he clutched Camilla's fist closed, and she looked at him and saw that he was bewildered.
God save me from lictor or masking, he said, exasperated. Kitheria the First must have enjoyed those games she played with me. Hang on.
Now he poked and prodded her. Her heart, her belly, the tops of her thighs, the place at her temple where the bullet had gone in. When she flinched, Palamedes said gently,
Sorry, give me a moment.
And she gave him a moment. And then, after a long time, he said, You're shedding thalagy like chaff in the wind. What's going on?
It's almost like a starvation reaction, but Cam and I know you're eating.
Not very much, admitted Nona, but Palamedes said,
Not so little that your framework should have gone into thalagy metabolism. You're eating your own reserves. You've got the level of retention I'd usually only see in palliative care. Nona, your soul's trying to leave your body.
Nona puzzled over this a little. But I like my body.
It doesn't matter about liking, said Palamedes. What's happening to you is why I can't be in Camilla's body for more than a handful of minutes, Nona. If I stay too long, I start trying to make inroads on her soul. I start trying to bed down and put up new wallpaper and displace Camilla, for all that we've tried to make sure that doesn't happen. At the same time, Cam's body tries to reject my soul, like when you try to blink dust out of your eye. But your body would never try to reject its own soul. Unless it didn't recognise it. Unless your soul was a stranger's, or a melange. Is that the Gestalt theory busted? Or confirmed? Is that how we explain the rapid healing?
He was talking much more to himself now. How could she explain?
But you see, Palamedes, I don't mind dying, said Nona, trying to make him understand. I've been doing it for ages. I'm not scared.
This explanation died on impact. Palamedes said with a voice like concrete,
I will not be party to this again.
Nona was a little bit afraid of that voice.
I'm sorry, Palamedes.
No, don't be. It's simply... Nona, we can't let your body die, he said. For one thing, it's the body of someone I owe a favour to, and I'd rather like to see the look on her face when I present it back to her. And if we lose the body, whither goes the soul? Let's say you are the other soul, and let's say I lose you. You die, she wakes up. The final kick in the pants in what I gather was a life long on kicks and short on very much else.
And yet, if I don't preserve her, Ninth, really, I sincerely did not want to have to look after your bedamned water bottle. Nona struggled to sit up. She was wet and itchy with sweat and the ink where the marker had touched her neck. She rubbed it before she could remember not to, and her hand came back smudged with black.
"Palamedes," she said, "do you think you know who I am?"
"I've got a theory," began Palamedes.
"Crown said she knew who I was," said Nona.
"Crown says a lot of things. Theories are all we have."
"Well, tell me your theories," Nona demanded, feeling much better from sheer excitement. "Say them out loud. Am I nice? Am I good-looking? Do I have lots of friends? Does everyone listen to me? How many legs do I have?"
Palamedes untucked Camilla's legs from underneath him and sat knees up, feet flat on the floor, and he held Nona's hand. He looked at her with those keen, earnest brown-grey eyes, the softest and nicest of greys and browns, like sheeny earthenware cups.
"Nona, we never wanted to lead you," Nona said.
"Does it matter any more?"
"I don't know, which frightens me," said Palamedes.
This was hardly to be borne, not after she had waited such a long time and in such circumstances. She said,
"Palamedes, please, tell me something, one titchy little thing, the smallest and tiniest thing. I've wanted to know so badly. Maybe I'm dying of curiosity."
"Not funny," said Palamedes.
"Please," said Nona.
In the end, he said, "All I know is this, Nona. If you're one of two people, current evidence suggests you're not just the first person, the one who owns your body." Nona thought back to mathematics.
"But that means I'm the second person."
"Or not solely the first person."
This was hard to get her head around.
"Can one person even be two people? I feel like I've only got enough room inside for me, and sometimes, like, that room's not even enough."
"Lictors can," said Palamedes. "Or at least, they thought they could. In fact, all they became were half-dead cannibals. I think a true lictorhood is a mutual death, a gravitational singularity creating something new, a true grand lysis, rather than the petty lysis of the megatherium. Oh, God, Nona. I'm rambling. I'm very sorry. I hate it when I'm like this."
Nona moved over to give him a hug. She hugged him like Camilla would have, the one thing she was truly good at, and he fell into it immediately. He put his head on her shoulder and breathed in deep through his nose. "Do you remember the girl on the broadcast?" he asked. "The one who wasn't a startlingly handsome and very obviously dead person with fashion hair."
"The redhead?"
"That one was easy."
"That's the other body you might come from," said Palamedes. "Her real name is Gideon Nav, and we need to get you to that body if we can. Spiritual gravity will do the rest."
This was horrifying. "But I don't want to be redheaded," said Nona. "I do not think of myself as redheaded, and I don't want to be a necromancer or a prince." "Palamedes," she said, am I a zombie?"
Palamedes took her by the shoulders and looked at her.
"You were born in the Nine Houses, Nona,"